listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kurula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Here's your host with the most, Nikki Kurula. We're going to jump right into this interview with Mauricio Ibanez Guzman. Did I say it all right?
Yes, you did.
All right. But it should be Ibanez, right?
Oh, well, I don't really care about that. You know, I mean, so many people messes up my surname that I just don't give a fuck anymore, you know?
You know what? Let's jump in real quick and talk about your guitars. I love all the guitars that you have. I know we talked about this a little bit last time. Yeah. Any new guitars on that rack?
Yes, actually, I have this. That one.
Ibanez.
It's sort of like an orange metallic sort of thing.
That's awesome. And what's significant about it that made you want to get it? Is it the pickups? It looks like
I think it's a pretty guitar. That's it, you know. And I have no idea what pickups it has. I just use it and it sounds good. I don't care.
That's awesome. And what do you usually play? What's your go-to acts? Do you kind of play with all of them, or do you kind of have different guitars that do certain functions?
Lately, I would say that I've been using this orange one a lot on my newest stuff because it feels good, you know. And it's like it feels that I sort of abandoned the other ones.
I bought the Silver Sky guitar. Oh, and I've been using it so much, and it's crazy because it's so light too. And it's just been my go-to as of late because it is like all of the functions that I want for a guitar for all of my projects. That seems to be it. But I feel like I'm neglecting all my other ones. So I'm going to start rotating.
Yeah. It's like we are on this honeymoon sort of phase with the guitar. So we want to enjoy it.
I can leave it right here. And, I grab it all the time. I'm always playing it. I always have to have one right next to me so I, you know, but I find that, you know, I get into those modes with all my guitars. Like there'll be ones that I'm just like, I need to play this right now because it just has a feeling or a vibe or you know what I mean? So I just posted a clip of me playing one of my Tellies and I was like, man, I gotta whip that out because I love that guitar and I love the action so perfect on it. The setup is so great, and I'm like, I need to bring that out. This is crazy.
Is that the John Mayer one?
Yes,
the one you have.
Yes.
Oh, that's sweet, man.
And you know, I don't know if you know the story. So I actually I bought a PRS Custom 24 because that's the PRS to get.
Right.
And, it's probably like my best and my nicest guitar that I've ever owned. I have a custom made acoustic and those are the two that are like my best guitars.
Right.
But my friend at Guitar Center, who I've known for years, he's like, you're gonna be back for that Silver Sky. And I was like, nah, let me play it. And so I played it and I was like, yeah, I still like the PRS Custom 24. And he's like, I have a feeling he's always one guitar ahead of me. He knows what guitar I'm gonna get next.
What made you
Do you know who Greg it? Do you know Greg Koch? Do you know who Greg Koch is?
I don't know who he is.
So he is a fantastic musician. I actually did a show with him with ZZ Top. And he is a real burner of a player. And so he interviewed Paul Reed Smith at NAMM.
Oh, wow.
Interviewed him about this guitar. And Paul Reed Smith said, you know, I went up to John Mayer and I said, you know, what do you want in a Strat? What do you want in a guitar? And John Mayer said that, you know, he wants this to sound like a 1958 vintage Strat that is his favorite guitar. And so he said, okay, cool. Let me see if I can build one. And long story short, he built a prototype and brought it to his sound check, and they A&B'd it between the two. And Mayer was like, nah, it just doesn't have the, it doesn't have the same giddy up. And he noticed it too. And so he was like, dude, this is, these are all the same specs. And he said, can I take your vintage 58 guitar? How many days could I take it? And he said, I'll give you 2 days. And so he took it and he took the guitar apart, which I'm like, oh my God, he just took like $100,000 guitar apart. This is crazy.
Right.
And he looked at the wiring and everything and noticed there was a certain wire with the pickup that you just don't get anymore. So he ended up knowing the family that has that wire, and he contacted them and basically A&B'd it with this 1958 Strat. And it has the sound now. And you know what? It's like I went back and I was like, I'm going to play this again. And you know, I didn't have a rosewood neck Strat, and I was just like, I fell in love with it. So, you know, I could talk guitars with you all day because I just love instruments. It looks like you have mostly maple necks, but I see one or two rosewood necks. Do you have a preference?
Well, I would say that I like maple necks better.
You know, I do too. The weird thing is, like, with this, this one has a rosewood neck, and I feel like the rosewood has a little bit more give. You know, like when you dig in, it just like it has a little bit of like it's a little bit softer, you know, at least it feels that way. So like it feels better in that regard. But I actually also prefer maple. So it's very strange that I love a rosewood guitar right now because I usually don't.
It's such a personal preference anyway, you know.
And I also wonder if it changes like day to day or month to month for all of us.
Yeah. It's like the weather or something like that.
Yeah.
But the thing about the John Mayer guitar, I mean, I've seen comments from people on YouTube and stuff, and they say, no, this is just a freaking Stratocaster with a Paul Reed Smith headstock. And
no,
I mean, they're very quick to judge.
You know what my friend told me? He was like, this is like a $6,000 Strat for $2,000. And I was like, that's a good way to kind of like paint it. You know, it's... Right. It's a much better Strat than most Strats, but I have a great Strat too. So like I'm very partial. It's a maple neck. It's a custom shop 66. Used to be Courtney Love's guitar. She put like a big gash in it. Like, you know, I was just so pissed, but now it's mine and it is my favorite Strat. And, but it's weird. It's just like, you know, when I need to A and B them. I've never A and B'd them yet, but it's quieter and it's lighter. And it's just as ferocious on the pickup. So it's like, man, this is crazy because it's so much quieter. But I did play a noiseless pickup Strat that I really fell in love with and I still think about it. So there's a part of me that may get another guitar, but I really honestly, you can only play one at a time. So it's like, do I need another guitar? I don't think so.
Right. You got me thinking about the noiseless pickups. Aren't those the ones that Eric Clapton uses?
So I'm sure he has them on his Strats now. That's not how he used to have them. But the noiseless, you know, my first PRS was noiseless. And I was like, wow, I'd never had a guitar that did that. So I love that. And then the noiseless Strat I think that I picked up is actually even quieter than this PRS.
What about the tone?
The tone's great. The tone's great. It does not affect that. It's so crazy. They figured it out. They figured out two things. I think the two biggest like advances in guitars are they have figured out how to keep strings in tune, you know, like with the heads. And they figured out how to make noiseless pickups. And I think that is probably it's not going to get much better than that or it's not going to make much more of a difference to me.
Yeah. Well, if I think about it, I would say that noise is one of the things that I really hate in a guitar. You know, if I plug something that is noisy and buzzing and crap, you know, it's like fuck, I need to change these pickups. You know, I hate this hum.
Yeah. Right?
So, yeah, that's something that I don't like.
Well, and it's crazy, too, because it's like, I don't know if I don't notice it with other guitarists or other albums, or it's just that I notice it too much on my own stuff. But it's, you know, like I accept it when I hear it on somebody else's, but when I record, I'm like, oh, I want it to be completely quiet. And but you know what? My favorite record that I've made is the last one that I've made. You know, I just think it, and it's, and
Revolutions.
Yeah. And you know what? It has a lot of noise. There's noise everywhere and it's not the quietest, and it has peaks in every instrument. There's a peak on something, and yet it's my favorite because it resembles some of those early Ray Charles or Beatles records that have the same thing.
Ooh, yeah, and those guys were noisy.
Yes.
Back in the day.
Yeah.
I mean, if you really want to have that vintage sort of sound, it cannot be clinical. I mean, if you're making a record in your studio, in your modern studio, like 21st century kind of thing, you know, I mean, you're not going to have that noise, right? I mean, you don't want to get that noise, right? So, for instance, I mean, I have so many Waves plugins,
right?
Stuff that I bought through the years, and they have this little option to have the 50 cycle hum or 60 cycle hum on the plugin because it gives it an analog sort of vibe, I guess.
Right.
But for me, it's just freaking noise, and I just turn it off. You know, it's like I fucking hate it. So I don't like it.
And what kind of gear are you recording on? Logic still? Are you doing Pro Tools? Are you doing?
I used Logic once, and I hated it. It's like I didn't like it at all.
Well, there's about it. I like both, but I feel like for my own use, I love Logic, but in a studio, I love Pro Tools. It's just the standard; it always will be. You know?
Yeah. Well, I was pretty much forced to use Pro Tools at LAMA. You know, at LACM.
Yeah.
So I mean, I had no choice. You know.
And then what? What do you use for plugins, like for amp sounds, or do you use stock stuff, or do you have like different plugins?
I mean, maybe you remember that I use Reaper for my.
Yep.
Recording purposes. Right now for guitar, I'm using the Petrucci Neural DSP plugin a lot.
You know what? I use the Corey Wong Neural DSP plugin. I love
that's
that plugin.
Sweet. That's awesome. I mean, that's very funky, right?
Yeah. How's the Petrucci one? That's amazing. That's so awesome.
Incredible. It's fucking amazing.
So tell me, what are the things about it that you love?
It has the tone, the sound. It's like the sound in a box or something. I mean, it's like you have Petrucci in your fucking studio or something. You know, with his thousands of dollars worth of gear,
right?
In a fucking plugin. Yeah. So, yeah. So it's amazing. You know,
I always think about
cleans,
getting
leads or rhythms.
I always think about getting tons more plugins, but I also noticed that sometimes it bogs down my computer, and I hate that. It's like, you know, and I have a good computer that runs efficiently, but I find that when I try to limit my plugins with certain things that I absolutely need. But man, it's so hard because there's so many, and like they pop up new ones every.
How many tracks do you run in your sessions?
I mean, it depends on the song. You know, like sometimes, like I just did a string arrangement, and it was like maybe 10, 20 tracks. You know, something like that.
You know, you get like to 50 or 60 tracks or something crazy.
I don't go that hard on my computer with Logic, but I will do that on a record. I don't do it on my latest records because I almost find like less is more. Like you can just get so indulgent and just keep layering stuff and it can get out of hand. So I try not to do that, and I try to take that concept and like limit it also. I try to do under 24 if I can. But there's sometimes where it's like it's okay to do four layers of vocals and four layers of guitars or four layers of, you know, drum sounds, you know.
And the stuff that you do is different. I mean, you have more instruments in your music, maybe a string section or maybe a brass section, right?
And
you're going to have a bunch of players in there, and you need them in your session, right? So they put strain on your computer, I guess.
Well, you know, with you, you love playing everything, which I love too. It's like, do you ever feel like you almost can get in your own head with just layering or adding parts or mixing? Like the great thing about it is, like, you know, you are hands-on with everything and you're able to control everything that you want and get the things because you know you're fast at it. Because I know I'm the same way. It's like I love writing and I love producing stuff and I just know that I can do it in a fast way if I just sit and do it. But do you also think sometimes it's easy to get trapped in your own head of, am I being excessive? Am I doing too much? Like, do you have the instinct where you're like, I know when it's good, that's good?
I would say that I know when something's good and I like it and I have no doubt about it, you know? Yeah. And so, yeah, it's a very rare occasion when I doubt myself regarding music. That moment when you have a song going on and then you say, well, this is shit or this is crap. No, that doesn't happen often.
So do you think it took time to get there for you, or do you think it's just always been there from the beginning?
What?
Like the instinct to know, like, when something's good or right. Do you think that it had to develop? Because, like, I know for me when I first did my records, I, like, would second guess a little bit in the beginning. And then as soon as I started realizing, okay, this is the sound and style and vibe, and I want this energy in track.
It doesn't happen to me. I mean, I start with a corporation, maybe on the piano, or maybe on the guitar, maybe on a synthesizer. Doesn't matter. If the corporation is interesting for me, I know that I can create a good song, period.
So do you start with the chords first and then you start writing melodies on top of that?
The chords have to be good, you know? They have to be interesting. They have to move me in a way, right?
So, and what I love about your songwriting too, it's like you love great rock bands like Queen and Beatles.
Yeah.
And so, like, a lot of your guys have a lot of those influences. Like, you ever feel like, you know, what's so great about the Beatles, they did so much with so little. And you ever feel like you want to add, like, weird instruments, you know, like a Rickenbacker or like a sitar guitar or, like, you know what I mean? Like, what do you ever want to add strange sounds like that, or have you?
That sounds like craving for stuff that is vintage, right. I would say, right? So if you're going to have a Rickenbacker, I guess that's a vintage sort of sound, right? Something like maybe Paul McCartney used, or maybe John Lennon.
Right.
The thing about old records is that, you need that gear, that specific gear, the old stuff, and the recording techniques to make it sound authentic, I guess.
Right.
Right. So the way I do things is too modern, I would say. You know, if you asked me, like, Mauricio, make a record that sounds like the Beatles, I couldn't do it because I just don't know how to get that sound.
Right.
On a mixing level, on the process of layering things and what kind of plugins to use and everything, you know, it's a different way of working, I guess.
And do you find like records that you're listening to maybe currently are shaping what you're writing for your next record, or are you listening or chasing after records that you loved from before? How do you find that sounds around you influence your art?
I'm listening to different stuff all the time. Yesterday I was listening to Hall & Oates, and that stuff is really good but very old.
Right.
So it's like the other day I was listening to Enya.
I love
it. It's like I'm all over the place, man. It's like I don't limit myself to just one style when it comes to listening to music. I just love to absorb everything that I like. You know?
This is why we get along, because, like, we listen to the same stuff. First of all, and I met Hall & Oates. I met them at
no way.
I met them.
Everybody, man.
You know what's crazy? I used to work at Guitar Center, and I worked in acoustics, and they were being inducted in the Rock Walk.
Wow!
So they came down, and this is kind of a funny story. So my friend who was working with me at the time, his name's Oliver, great guy. So he had like a little bit of a dark fro, and he grew it out. And he grew a mustache out, and right. he wore a members only jacket, so he looked like he was straight out of 80s, and he looked
right.
like John Oates. So like when they came, he went up to Daryl Hall and he said, "Can I get a picture with you?" And he was like, "Yeah." And he signaled to John Oates and he looked at John Oates. He said, "Not you." And John Oates was super stunned. But then they all three took a picture. But it was one of the funniest things I've ever seen, because it was
That's
just
awesome.
Like nobody That's awesome. Was expecting it. And it was just so funny. And he literally looked like 80s John Oates versus right. modern John Oates. And the modern John Oates has his, you know, hair trimmed, like his facial
yeah,
hair.
Yeah, he looks very different nowadays. Yes. You know, because yes. I was looking for videos on YouTube. I was like, well, what does Hall & Oates sound like today? And I went to YouTube, and yeah, obviously they're older, but they look so different, you know.
And they still have it. Like, I've seen them twice, I think, live, and they
yeah,
just...
the guy that sings, I mean, that is Hall, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
He still has the voice, man. I mean, still, I mean, after so many years, you know, still he has the voice.
So
he
what?
Good.
What genre do you think the new album you're making is in?
I'm sorry, what's the question again?
What genre do you think the new album you're in is?
The thing is that I have several new albums.
That's awesome.
You know that, thank you. It's just, I mean, I write so much stuff that it all becomes a blur at some point. You know, it's like a freaking mess, because I'm making tons and tons and tons of songs. It's just fucking crazy.
That's awesome. You know? That's great. It should be. Let's play something first. What do you want to play first?
I sent you some stuff from my upcoming solo album called Blue Stardust. That's going to be album number 9, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, the song is going to be the one that says number 1. I can't remember the name.
Hold on. I'll look.
What was the one that... What was number 1?
Let me see. You have
The Deepest Cut. The
Deepest Cut. That's it. Let's play yeah, the Deepest yeah. Cut, all right? Yeah, Here's yeah. the Deepest Cut.
To fight back, but you always make that deepest cut. break cuts. I'm not hard at all. When I thought I could believe we could get through this, I don't know if I will go back home. I might drive my car and get the hell out of here.
Very Nine Inch Nails, Trent Reznor. Like, I liked it. Very Porcupine Tree too. I know they're a huge influence on you as well. But I hear a lot of Trent Reznor and Nine Inch Nails in that for sure.
Thank you so much. That sounds great. Yeah. To be honest with you, people tell me that my stuff sounds like Trent Reznor, and I'm like, oh really? Because I haven't heard his music yet.
So good. He's so good, dude. I love Nine Inch Nails. I actually got to watch them live when we played a festival with them in Bonnaroo, and I was like so blown away. His shows are a visual and musical spectacle. They're just awesome.
Right. He's one of the greats, as far as I know. Yeah.
Now, how many times did you, like when you tracked your guitar solo, was it comp? Did you do it all in one take? Like, how did you kind of figure out what you wanted to play for that?
When it comes to guitar solos, I cannot do things in one take. I'm just not able to. It's just not what I do. I mean, I wish I had the fretboard knowledge, because I have the solo in my head. I know what it sounds like in my head. It plays in my head, inside of my brain. But if I try to do it in one go, it doesn't work, because I don't know where the notes are.
Right.
So I have to figure it out slowly, chunk by chunk, and then piece it all together, right?
That's just the way I do things. I'm a little bit odd with that, because, you know, like for my last record, for Power Through the Pain, I actually worked out the solo and I knew what I was going to play before I went in, and it took me 45 takes.
Oh my god. I will go crazy.
Because I knew what I was wanting to play and how I wanted to sound. So if, like, the timing wasn't right, if it was a little rushed, or if I didn't get the bend, if I didn't get the right growl, I would just redo it. Now, on what was the song on The Other Side, I did it all live, and I did it on the second take. I, like, played, like, a bunch of, like, noodly takes while we were getting sounds, did one take, and I was like, nah, that's not it. And then I literally was like, you know, kind of like did like a meditation and kind of was like, I was like, Henrix, Prince, if you want me to play a solo, let it be played right now. And that was the take that's on the record, which is crazy. Mm-hmm. But it's like, I don't think I could do that all the time. It's like, I'm so in my head. I'm sure you're like that too, because you probably put a lot of pressure to want it to sound a certain way, especially on a record, right?
Yes, I do. Yeah. The thing is that I don't really take a lot of time to create my solos. I don't like to spend that much time on it, because I feel that it loses the magic, I would say.
Right.
You know, it's like you have to be in the moment. You have to be in the zone, sort of saying, you know, I mean, and if you're not feeling it, then it's just not going to happen, because your mind is somewhere else, and your brain needs to be there connected with the music.
Yeah. Right? The funny thing, I thought the opposite would happen when I made the records. I thought the solo that I had composed would be on the second take. And I thought the one that I have to do on the fly would take 45 takes. And it was the opposite. And I also did it with, like, I had all this tape. And, you know, the first opening track is like, you know, the first opening track on our record is like 9 minutes long, you know, something like that. And I bought all this extra tape for that first track, thinking, right, oh, we're going to need at least two or three reels just to get three takes. We got it. Right.
Oh, what happened? Hello. Went down.
All right, we lost you for a second.
Okay.
I was like, oh, right, he's gone. No. So it's just like what I was just saying. It's easy to put an ideal of what you want in your mind for a record, but it doesn't always come out that way, you know?
I would say that you have to just let go of your expectations and go with the flow, sort of thing.
The weird thing is, it's like I was preparing so much for that long song to take so much tape that we got on the first take because we rehearsed so much. And then the other songs that I thought wouldn't take two takes, three takes, took two takes and three takes.
And you did this thing the analog way, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, when I I'm doing a record now with my blues trio. We're doing it all Pro Tools, and it's giving us so much more convenience. But I'm also noticing it's taking longer because we have convenience, and it's like we're just like coasting along doing it, you know. It doesn't have the same urgency. But I got one of the Rolling Stones to play on it. Nobody knows this yet. I've just announced it a little bit on Facebook, but the keyboardist for the Rolling Stones is a hero of mine. He played with Eric Clapton for years and the Allman Brothers. He played on two tracks. He's a hero of mine that I've been just waiting to contact, and I just sent him an email, not sure if he'd respond, and he did. It was so crazy.
It's kind of crazy because, you know, it sounds like you know everyone in the industry. It's kind of crazy. You know Paul McCartney, man. I mean,
I think about this now. It's like when I started out, I had zero contacts. I didn't know anybody in the industry. I had no contacts, no family that really had any contacts. And I had to make all my own contacts by myself. And now it's like I've got these really great contacts, and every contact has led to a new contact that I've been waiting to meet or work with. So there's still a ton more people that I want to work with, but
you're pushing through. I mean, all of this is because of your hard work, and you're doing gigging a lot, playing live a lot.
You have 9 albums out. That's crazy. When was your first album that you put out? Well, how old were you?
That was what was the name of that album?
You know, you put out a lot of music when you forget the names of your records.
Yeah, my first one was Shades of Light and Darkness. Yeah, and that was released in 2016.
Wow.
Yes.
Wait,
that took 7 years to write.
You've done 9 albums. You do what? 2 albums a year?
Yes.
Oh my God!
And more than that, my friend, because I create more stuff besides my Mauricio stuff. Yeah.
You're a mad scientist, man. You're just like always
spend hustling all the fucking day in this room, man. I mean, that's this is what I do. I mean, this is what I live for, you know.
That's amazing, though. Yeah. I mean, that's really what it's about. It's like once you find that thing, you know, that's what I always tell people. It's like you have to find that thing that drives you.
Yeah.
And like as I get older, like now I'm 43, it's like I'm finding more time to kind of learn to relax and
You got me,
so much pressure, you know?
Yeah, you got me thinking about one thing, you know, because last year I got kind of depressed, the whole pandemic shit, and I felt so lonely because I was like, oh, I haven't seen my friends in like 2 years. I went to my room to cry and stuff like every single night. It was very pathetic, I would say. But the thing is that I was like I was not feeling comfortable with just doing my thing, you know what I mean? So yeah, it hit me hard, and I felt it, the loneliness. you know. And then I fixed it by getting together with some friends and hanging out and trying to be a little bit more daring, if I say so, right? Because with the COVID shit, you get scared and you just get locked inside of your room and you don't do anything, right? I mean, you sort of get paralyzed or something. And that cannot happen.
For me, it's weird. It's like, I don't know what it is. I mean, you know, I think a lot of my friends know this about me. It's like, I just want music all the time. You know, it's like, so whenever I get to run into my friends or see my friends, and I love them for allowing me to just kind of like, hey, let's go out when it's, but I mean, like, all I think about is music. I think about music 24/7. And yeah. Like, there are even times where I'm so sleepy and I'm about to pass out where I'm like, I really should go practice. You know, it's like, that's always on my mind. Like, am I practicing? Right. Am I getting work done? Am I moving the needle for my life musically or whatever? Right. So how do you deal with that? How do you deal with that? Like, you know, creatively, to never just stay in one place or to keep staying so motivated to make records?
I have a huge ambition, I would say, because I'm very determined to create the biggest discography I can possibly create. That sounds very pretentious, I know.
It's
what I want to do, you know. I mean, if Frank Zappa did like 100 albums or something, I don't know.
Otis is making his appearance.
Hey, oh, Otis. Hello there, doggy.
He's making his appearance now, huh? So I was like, I'm going to leave the door open because last time you missed him.
I didn't know what the hell was going on because I couldn't hear the music. And you were pointing at the dog and I was like, what the fuck?
You're like, what's going on? Yeah, you know what? It's so funny. It's like, he does that in my sessions too. Like, I'll be in the middle of doing a vocal and he'll just barge in and be like, what's up? I just want to say what's up. See what you're doing. Right. You okay? All right, I'm out. And then like, look, he's already gone. He's like already out the door.
Yeah.
It's funny.
Dogs are very smart, I would say.
Well, and you know what? It's like when it comes to talk about companionship, he's the only thing in my life, really, that if I'm working on music and he comes in and he loves to play and he'll come in, he'll bring me a toy. And he'll like literally get upset with me. Like, even when I was texting you about doing the show,
right,
I was like, yo, I got to go play with Otis because he like, if he sees me looking at my phone, he'll get up into my face and be like, come on, like, let's go play. So like, I drop everything for him and he never has to wait on me doing a session. But there are times where I'm like, Otis, I'm in the middle of a session. Let me finish this. And he'll be like, he'll literally leave me toys outside my music room. It's just,
feels like you're dealing with a little kid or something like that.
Yes. It's like a toddler that's spoiled all the time, but the only difference is I can leave him at home by himself.
They're more intelligent than cats because cats don't give a shit and you can leave them there and they do nothing. So
that's true.
That's one of the reasons why I have cats, because they don't take that much of my time,
right?
I guess. So yeah, that's, I mean, I love both, but I would say that dogs are more intelligent. Period.
Yeah, I would agree.
You know? I mean, if something happens to you, if you have an accident, if you get ill or something, the dog's gonna know and it's gonna get sad about it. Your
true.
Cat.
No, nothing. No guilt. No nothing. Guilt, no conscience.
Nothing. I want this human to die or something. Already.
They keep you around because they know you're feeding them. You're like, all right, I'll keep you around because you're feeding me. But that's
right.
It.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about this next track. Tell me about the inspiration behind it. I'll tell you the name of it in 2 seconds.
This song called Hold On, I think.
Well, I have that, and I also have another one. Which one do you want to play first?
Hold On. That's the one that we collaborated together.
Oh, awesome. I love this. I haven't heard this. You haven't said this to me yet.
I knew that you would like it because of that.
Oh, man. Okay, well, cool. Well, tell me a little bit about the production of this. How did you interpret what we did and turn it into?
Well, I loved your contributions on this song.
Thanks, man.
Because the thing about the piano is that I cannot play it. I can just arrange it and put it together, like the MIDI thing, right? But to play it for real, I just can't do that, right? I'm a guitar guy. So yeah, I loved that aspect, the arrangement. I was like, wow, if I tried to do this by myself, I could have done it.
And I remember, dude, you know, there, I'm like this with all sessions. There are times where, man, I don't have all the time in the world to do everything. And I wish I did. And it's like, it's like sessions pull me, but like work and just pushing, you know, musicians have to make a living. And it's like always like what you have to do. Like I just spent 3 days doing my books on the songwriting team. And like, I hate doing that stuff. But I remember working on this song and feeling like I wish I could put more time into it. So I don't even remember what I sent you. So I'm excited to hear this just for that reason. So
yeah.
Tell me, for the rest of the production, how did you approach it?
Well, I would say that I loved your guitar playing as well. It's very bluesy. Oh, thanks, man. Has a lot of soul, so a lot of feeling on it. And I like that. I mean, it is the kind of song that you need to have a feeling to play, right? Not just the shredded kind of thing, because that doesn't work, right? That doesn't work with that kind of song. It's a feely sort of song. I don't know how to explain it better. It's just
Let's play it. I'm excited. I'm curious. This is Hold On by Mauricio Ibanez Guzman.
I just wish I could be useful. Please don't.
Yeah, I remember those parts now, man.
Yeah.
Awesome. All
right.
It was cool. I heard you pan them. I don't know if I did that or if you did that. How did you – I don't remember that. Tell me a little bit of how you approached mixing this.
There's something that I love doing regarding the vocals. I use this slab delay sort of thing that gives me that old Elvis kind of sound, I guess. It's a very old technique, right?
Yeah.
I don't use it on every single song, right? I mean, I would be crazy to do that, but sometimes I think it's worthy.
I did it on All Night, on the song All Night, because it has that vibe. It's a slapback delay. And it has that old Ray Charles, Elvis, all the 50s guys would use it. And the 60s guys and the 70s guys. Stevie Wonder used to use it all the time, you know?
Yeah, it's such a stable. I mean, it's such a legendary sort of sound, right? It has the vibe. So I could hear it in my head before I actually did it. I knew what I wanted, basically. Right.
And I remember, and how did you kind of come up with the production on the track? It was very, like, almost 90s. There was, like, a 90s kind of, like, almost country rock vibe, which is cool because it's like poppy, and that's like a lot of the poppiest country that I love came out of that period.
Yeah, because it's just a very how do you say this, like a ear friendly, I don't know how to say that. It's just a very melodic song.
You know what, I was surprised that, you know, I'm sure every artist gets a little surprised with this too. Usually, if I do guitar tracks for somebody, it's like they won't use all of them. They'll use just some of them. But I think you used all of them because I don't remember any other parts that I tracked that weren't in there, you know?
I loved everything, man. So I kept everything.
That's awesome. Well, I'm very honored that I showcase on your record, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, you did. And you will appear on the credits for sure.
That's awesome. Well, you have to send me the credits because I want to see it, man. Because it's cool. No, it's
definitely.
It's like what I love to do.
Thank you so much, man. I mean, because you really added some magic to that song. And I really appreciate it.
I love doing that. And honestly, it's like, the funny thing is I get, you know, and I felt like this way on your track too. As soon as the guitar parts were done, especially with the guitar parts, as soon as they were done, I got a little sad because
why?
There's something like, I definitely love the creation part for guitar parts on songs. And once it's finished and tracked and I don't have to play guitar anymore, I get a little sad that there's nothing else that, you know what I mean? It's because it's like, you know, it's weird. I think more than any other instrument, I know you can relate to this. It sculpts and paints so many kind of colors on a song. And it's kind of like, I think one of the most, it is like the string section on a track, you know? Yeah. So it's hard not to indulge, or it's hard not to want to keep writing parts, or, you know, writing parts on parts on parts, you know?
Right. You know, when I deal with other musicians, especially in my music, I tend to be very honest to my feelings in terms of performance of everything. I mean, everything that the musicians can give. And I would say that you did a fantastic job.
Thanks, man. That means a lot, dude. You know, it's like,
you did.
You know, too, it's like, I wanted to turn it out for you because I remember you sent me this track. You're like, hey, man, do you want to play something on this? I was like, yeah. And the funny thing is, like, I remember doing the guitar parts because I remember sitting just being like, I was worried you weren't going to like some of the stuff I was putting down because they were weird. They're like, there are parts where it was doing some busy stuff and I was trying to make it work where it was supportive to the song, but also this is what I was hearing. You know, it's like, so it's like I was like so scared that it was like too much. You know, so
I would say that it sounds good. You know, I mean, I don't hear parts that are clashing with each other.
Yeah, and you know,
I don't hear that. You know,
what's so fun, it's like I totally forgot about the piano part, because mostly piano parts to me, they're just like, they're never the lead. You know, like on my songs, even when I wrote the songs on piano, they weren't like the main instrument. You know, it's like,
okay,
I'm learning now, like, oh, okay, that this has to be the driving part of the song, because like once right. you bring it into the band, everybody starts bringing in parts, and it's like you start seeing, oh, this is starting to fall back, you know, behind all these parts, which I like,
right.
because I like, you yeah. know, Eric Clapton, I heard say this and I loved it. He's like, my favorite thing to do, he's like, I don't even want to be out in front. He's like, I want to be on a big band stage. I want to be hiding behind everybody just playing all these licks. And I was like, yes, that's how I feel. You know, right. it's like, I would love to do that. Just like,
I mean, Eric Clapton is Eric Clapton. I mean, he can play with whoever he wants in the world. He can hire the best musicians anywhere, right?
But it's crazy to think that he would rather be hiding in the back. You know, it's like, I don't know. Social anxiety, or if it's
he does life. That because he has great musicians to play with. I mean,
right.
he can leave the stage if he wants to, and let the guys play and be amazing because they can.
Right, right?
That's it.
It's just a trip. So I what I like is like when you hear parts and you hear players, and with piano, I just feel like it's always like. A supportive, it's like a rhythm guitar part to me. So right. it's like when I heard the piano, I was like, oh yeah, I remember this. This is crazy. It's like, you know, but it's awesome. Thank you for featuring me on the tracks. I'm honored, dude. That you're was welcome. The surprise of the interview. And man, I'm flustered. This is great.
You're very welcome, my friend.
Well, so tell me, like, this new album as a whole, mm-hmm. what was the concept and the vision for it?
Well, my previous album is called Chaos and Creation, number 8. Yeah, that album was written entirely using contact instruments and very particular ones.
That was the one we had on the show for last year.
I don't think so.
Are you sure?
No. If I remember well, the stuff that we played on the previous interview was stuff from the third album and the fourth and the fifth, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, I remember we talking about. I think I remember told you Paul McCartney has a record called Chaos and Creation in the Backyard. Yeah, did you know that?
It's like you guessed immediately where I got that from. I got cocked so easily, man. I mean, it's not fair.
Can't fool me, man. I'm your master teacher Jedi, dude.
yeah, you are. You are. It's like I was caught. How do you say that? Caught red-handed. I'm
red-handed. You got your cookie in there. You're like, okay, I'm guilty.
Yeah, definitely. the album number 8 was a very cinematic sort of thing. Because it was contact all over the place.
Right.
You know, big drums that were not like drum kits, but the sort of Hans Zimmer kind of thing, you know?
Right.
And it's a different sound. It's a bigger sound. It's a more atmospheric cinematic kind of thing. And it's different from my usual pop rock alternative progressive thing.
Right.
So, yeah. I guess this album, this one that I'm going to release now on August, Blue Stardust, is a comeback to my previous sound, my normal sound, I guess. You know, the variety of progressive and alternative metal, rock, pop sort of thing, yeah.
And, you know, for the record, how did you come up with the name Blue Stardust? Because I love Stardust, my favorite Nat King Cole song. So, So Blue Stardust, tell me, was it like any affinity to that song or no?
Let me try to remember where I got that name from. I guess it's just the vibe that the main song gave me. I wrote the main, we will listen to that in a few minutes, but it's just the vibe that the song gave me. I'm going to name this song Blue Stardust, and that was it. And then I had a friend of mine who's an illustrator, and he created an illustration for my album, and that's it.
That's awesome. Well, let's hear that. This is Blue Stardust, the title track from Riso.
Very funky one.
Guzman.
All right.
Like blue stars.
That was awesome, man. Dude, do you
Thank
ever,
you.
You ever listen to Fish?
Who?
Fish.
Was that the guy from Marillion, I think?
Trey Anastasio. It's a jam band from they're from Vermont.
Ah, that's another thing.
That's another thing,
yeah. No, I'm not familiar with
it. He's a great guitar player. Very, very similar styles. It's very cool, man. It was very cool.
You mean the funky stuff?
Yeah. They have a little bit of like, they'll do funky stuff next to country bluegrass stuff, next to rock stuff, next to prog right. stuff. So I think you'll like them. If you've
pretty
never
much heard them, pretty much awesome. What I do, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And that song, especially too, it's like, definitely has that vibe. It's a lot of the harmonies, everything very similar. You'll love it. You'll that's really great. Love it. But you that's all. Awesome.
Send it on a message.
Yep, I'll send it to you.
I can check it later.
So tell me, when it comes down to your next record, what do you think the vision's going to be? And also, where can people find you if they want to find you online?
What's the vision's going to be? Well, I usually release my stuff on Bandcamp. That's where I get my money from, usually. And the other streaming platforms do not give me anything because I'm a small artist, right? So it's not like I care that much about it anymore.
Right.
Well, the thing is that I remember that I was so pissed off at Spotify at some point that I decided to take my whole catalog away from it. And I guess I made a bad decision because everyone uses Spotify, right? I mean, it's like you cannot go against the system, right? It's kind of a hard thing to do. So, yeah, it's like you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't, or something like that. Well, how the saying goes. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yep. Sometimes you have to play the game just to get into the stratosphere, but I'm going to try and change that. We'll have to talk about that in the future.
Yeah.
Where can people find you online? Bandcamp? What's your Bandcamp link?
It's mauricioivanis.bandcamp.com.
Spell that for people just so people know.
Oh, you're making me spell things, man. I suck at that. It's like I'm going to start again. Shit.
No, you had it right.
mauricioivanis.bandcamp.com.
Okay. And that's bandcamp.com, right?
Yeah.
We got to spell it out because people are dumb. Let's be honest. Well, Mauricio, you've been a wonderful guest. Thanks for coming back to Wake Up Hollywood. We're going to have to have you back.
Having me again here.
Of course. We're going to have you back as you keep on releasing records, man. So we'll have you back for your 10th, man.
Thank you so much, man.
We'll have to collaborate on more music, man. Absolutely.
Yeah. Let's do it. You know, I mean, I'm going to be writing some stuff and then I'm going to be like, oh, yeah, I'm going to need Nikki for this.
Yeah. Well, I'm always happy to help, man. Well, on behalf of Mauricio, myself, and Sam, thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you guys next week. Peace and love. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. All right. We out.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence right here on LA Talk Radio.